worry, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bro. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 82 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will talk about what we've been eating, discuss the news, and then conclude by giving our take on Norm, the inflammatory new pro-vegan video taking the internet by storm.
It's a Norm storm.
It's a Norm storm. And good episode. But before we get into that, you know, Andy, what have we been eating? And I say that because we were reunited and it felt so good.
So happy to be back in the physical presence of one Professor Paul Steller.
Andy and myself went to the New York City Vegetarian Food Festival this past weekend, where I was reunited with Andy, and now we are actually both recording at my place. So this is the first time we've been recording together since the last time we posted an Instagram video of us recording together, which has been a while.
So, Paul, Andy. We went to the New York City Veg Food Fest. It's becoming our tradition to do that one together. It's always fun. It's always packed.
Always fun. Well,
it's always been fun for me.
Yeah. I have gotten violently ill one year. I've locked my keys in my car and had to wait for a very long time next year. Nothing bad happened this year, though.
No. It was a fun year, and we met some wonderful people.
We did.
And we ate some delicious food.
We did.
But actually, why don't we start off by talking about some of the wonderful people that we met? We had a lot of Beardos. We gave out some buttons. And actually, we haven't announced this anywhere. We also have Bearded Vegan stickers as well.
Yeah.
Only made 100 of those, though. So they're going to be in very short supply until we make more.
And they look pretty darn good, if yes. I do say so myself. They look
almost exactly like the buttons.
But bigger and shinier.
So thank you to Stephanie and Brian.
Bryce,
Bria and Paul,
great name, Jenny,
Becky,
Maxwell,
and Sherry, who was so kind as to wait in a very long line to get a Screamer's pizza. At least an hour wait.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt like Sherry was gone for like 2 hours. Yeah. Like, it was so long and not, it's not a good situation if you're like a food vendor or like a vendor of any kind and you're just trying to get something real quick to eat. So thank you very much to Sherry for sticking it out.
Yeah, yeah, because I really wanted to try Screamers, but like Andy said, the line was an hour, and I wasn't about to abandon Andy behind the Compassion Co. booth for an hour. So, yeah, and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Blackbird, but it was pretty good.
Paul is biased towards Blackbird.
Got that Blackbird bias.
Blackbird bias. All right, so food at the fest, we had Marty's V Burger,
double cheeseburger, amazing,
really good.
Marty makes a nice burger,
and Marty's Burger is one I've had a few times before. This is like a nice fast food burger. I like that it doesn't necessarily feel like it's trying to be meaty, but it is kind of meaty. It has its own texture, really good flavor.
Yeah.
And also that Marty is a damn nice guy.
Seems like it. Very much seems like it. Yeah, that's something I can always count on when I'm in the New York Vegetarian Food Festival and I'm not puking my brains out.
And someone that I had never experienced before, never seen at a fest before, was Stoner Girl Treats and Eats.
And I had never seen them either. And I think they're from Washington, D.C., which may explain that.
So they were creating a ice cream waffle sandwich that was very eye-catching. Mm-hmm. It seemed to be kind of capitalizing on the unicorn craze that's going on right now, which at what point did unicorn just become synonymous with like a bunch of bright colors?
Unicorn is the new zombie, I think.
Yeah. Well, I hope that trend continues to rise so that I can continue to sell my vegan unicorn t-shirts, but
So yeah, it was a very brightly colored waffle, multicolored waffle with some very brightly colored ice cream on the inside and some very brightly colored sprinkles. And I think it was the dish at the Veg Fest that you saw people carrying it around and saw heads turning and saying, "Excuse me, where did you get that?" Which I said, which I also did that too, before I knew where it was. And then I also, one of my friends on Instagram, when I posted the picture of it, had posted like someone that was not at the Veg Fest said, like, I've seen my friends posting this all day on Instagram.
It makes a great picture.
It did.
It did make a great picture.
And I'm just going to say this. And if Andy seems hesitant to review its actual quality, you've dear listener, you've picked up something correctly, but I thought it was amazing. I thought it was really, really good.
I thought it was good. I wasn't blown away by it. That's all.
I wasn't blown away by the mode of transportation that they chose to give us this waffle ice cream sandwich in, which was a flimsy piece of wax paper. So by the time Andy had finished his half and I went to go eat my half, there was just a big pool of blue ice cream at the bottom of this wax paper that I had to curl up so that it just didn't drip all over Andy's t-shirts. And some ice cream wasted because I couldn't figure out a way to
siphon it into your mouth.
Yeah, without making a mess everywhere. My only complaint was the wax paper. They could have given me a nice bowl or a plate with a little lip on the edge, but I guess I can't be too picky.
I would eat it again. I would eat it again.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
And then in between the fest, it's a 2-day festival, we went up to Harlem and got Seasoned Vegan.
Was this your first? This was not your first time, Andy.
This was my second time visiting.
This was my first time.
What'd you think?
I thought it was great. It was a long wait for the... And we were tired and hungry, and it was a long wait, but one that I would say is worth it.
I would say worth it as well.
It's all vegan, as the name implies. Soul food. And
wouldn't it be weird if it wasn't all vegan?
It would be, yes. But, we've been to places that say all vegan and then have, like, honey and stuff in it.
True.
100% plant-based honey. We got some, like, fried chicken nuggets as an appetizer. Seitan? Question mark?
I think they were Mewa.
Mewa? Okay. Either way, we got some fried chicken nuggets as an appetizer. They had, like, a kind of, I don't know, different consistency than I'm used to, I think. Maybe because I haven't had China pan in a while.
They had a nice, like, panko breading crust.
Yeah.
Very, very, very crispy, which mm-hmm. is the number one quality I look for in a chicken nugget.
Yeah. And the sauces that came with it, also very good.
Yeah.
And then I got the a fried shrimp po' boy, and it was just the fried shrimp was made out of soy. Great portion size, because that was one of the cheaper items. And I thought it was a bigger portion than some of the other items. It was great. I thought it tasted phenomenal. I think we might have posted a picture on the Instagram. If not, oh well.
I posted a picture on Instagram. Okay. I got a plate that was collards, mac and cheese, and smothered chicken, which was, you know, soy chicken and some kind of gravy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And they have these cookies that are like...
Oh, I forgot about the cookie.
Like pecan, caramel... Shortbready almost kind of cookies. Very good. Very good.
The cookie was phenomenal. So. I was not hungry, but then I was told I had to have the cookie, and I had the cookie, and I was not upset.
Eat the cookie. Look to the cookie. So that was Seasoned Vegan. And
I will say about Seasoned Vegan, they have a decent amount of fishy dishes, and that's not something
fishes.
Like fishes. They have a decent amount of fish dishes, and that's not something that you see at a lot of vegan places. And at least I had the shrimp. It was good. I liked it. I tried a little piece of...
Crawfish. I think, yeah.
And that was good, too.
Yeah. To me, it was disturbingly realistic.
Yeah. So if you want some, you know, seafoody stuff, that might be the place to go.
Yeah. So that was Seasoned Vegan up in Harlem. And then also just very quick shout-outs to the Cinnamon Snail and Yeah Dog, which are some of our favorites as listeners of the show. Now. So it's funny. I poked my head upstairs where Yeah Dog was, and like most places had a line. Yeah Dog just had a zombie mob of people surrounding their table, just demanding dogs.
Demanding dogs.
Yes. So that's all the good food that we had at the New York City Veg Food Fest. You can find pictures of a lot of that over on Instagram. Something that I found not at the food fest. It's traversing the country. I was driving from Kirksville, Missouri, where my printers live, to New York City. And somewhere in, I want to say, Indiana, I pulled off the highway to a White Castle because I heard legend of a new black bean burger.
Just at this one White Castle?
I believe they're at every location.
Ooh.
But certainly the people on Instagram had many questions about the location. So White Castle, I want to say a year, maybe a year or two ago, released a veggie burger. And at first, the buns were not vegan. As you know, Paul, I like some nice vegan buns. And so that was disappointing. But then they did change their formula and they made the buns vegan. I believe just all of their buns are vegan. I don't think they have like separate special ones for that. So I got it then and did not like at all.
Ooh. It's the burger or the bun?
The burger both. And bun combo.
Oh.
Of the veggie burger, their original burger. And I had it, and it's a Dr. Prager's patty, which is like the thing you see in the freezer section. You're like, doctor definitely made this, and I bet it doesn't taste good, and it's probably bland and mushy, and you would be correct in that assumption. So it was like awesome to see White Castle, you know, and White Castle was not like a nostalgic chain for me. I had them once that I can remember in my pre-vegan days, and it was we were on the way home from a show in New York, and we were like, White Castle, like, it's open, let's get some burgers.
Like the movie.
Yeah, I think it was even pre-movie.
Oh.
But they had a gimmick that just spoke to us due to its ridiculousness, and that is you could order a briefcase full of hamburgers.
And it came out in an actual briefcase?
It's like a cardboard briefcase, but there's a handle and everything. So, you know, there's like three of us or something, and it was like way too many. And you're eating them. They're small. They're sliders. Yeah, yeah. And there's not much to them. It's like burger and bun and like a sauce.
Yeah.
I think some might have grilled onions. But anyway.
I would be enticed by the briefcase of burgers as
right?
well.
It's like, where else could you buy a briefcase full of hamburgers?
Droopy Dog certainly would be enticed.
Yes. And from what I recall, those burgers were not particularly good either. So maybe they're just like keeping up with their theme of serving subpar burgers. But anyway, I stopped at this White Castle and I was like, I'm going to get one of each and then compare them and see how I remember them. And the only like vegan sauces they have is like a Thai chili, which is like the sauce you get for dipping like egg rolls in, stuff like that, you know? So it's like not really what you want. Like you want some, I don't know. So I just asked for ketchup on both of them, which they complied.
That's good. I'm glad they can comply with ketchup.
And the veggie burger was just as horrible as I remember it being. And the black bean burger was passable.
Oh.
I would eat it again. If like that was my late night option.
Yeah.
I was totally fine with it.
I'm not going to lie. The gimmick of the I'm still thinking about the briefcases.
I don't know if they still offer the briefcase, oh, Paul.
but just I do think it is enticing to order an absurd amount of yes. food because you're ordering like because they're so small. Yeah, you're ordering like I'll have 10 of these, and it's just like it just feels fun to order.
That's why it's fun to eat rice. Because you get so many of them.
That's true. I got a big smile on my face every time I eat rice.
You're like, I'm eating 700 of something right now. So anyway, I am glad that this exists. We've talked previously on the show about how, in general, you know, there's a lot to not love about fast food establishments. But ultimately, we do appreciate the purpose they serve. And if they're going to exist, we would rather them have vegan options than not. So it's actually very cool that they offer not one, but two vegan patties. And they weren't like shy about it. They weren't hiding it. Like I pulled into the parking lot and they had one of the big window decals, new black bean burger. And then they had like a sign on the lighting pole. And then when I pulled up to the drive-thru, there was like a big advertisement for it. And so I took a picture of said advertisement from the lighting pole, and we have never had something get such a reaction on our Instagram. Our Instagram, it's small but mighty. It's growing in followers, and we got like over 700 likes and like 60 comments or so.
Yeah,
some of the comments, Paul. Some of the comments made me want to have another "What's the deal with vegans?" section, but it like wasn't enough to really like get into it. But, you know, a lot of people that don't trust our judgment to do a little research, I guess. People that are like, are the buns vegan and all these things. Like, you know, you think that we're probably checking to see if things are vegan before we're eating them and posting about them, most likely. Some people were very demanding to know if I had personally checked with Dr. Prager or the Burger King or, like, whoever it is. I don't know. Wait. Who rules the White Castle? It's not the Burger King. He defected.
It should be the Burger King. And Ronald McDonald is the jester.
The jester. Anyway, people, you know, come on. Come on, y'all. Have a little faith in us. I'd be willing to bet that the vast majority of the people making those comments were not our followers because our listeners are fantastic and critical thinking folks.
Wink.
Speaking of our listeners, we actually got responses from every single person that won the button contest.
All three of them.
All three of them. Well, I was like, I bet some of these people have stopped listening now. Yeah. And so everyone emailed in. I actually, and we got some very nice emails from folks. We got like paragraphs of like backstory about them and their vegan journeys, how we kind of fit into their vegan life and all that. It was so awesome.
That was cool.
So I mailed out everyone's buttons today along with one of our new Beard Vegan sticker and every new Compassion Co. sticker that I just got in because I'm really excited about them. So thank you to everyone that did that. And for anyone that missed it, I'll just quickly say, if you go write us an iTunes review, you are entered forever into our contest. And every mailbag episode, every 10 episodes, we're going to pick one winner and they're going to get a button. So go ahead and do that. Helps us out. It would mean the world to us if you do. So thank you very much for that.
It's only 9 episodes away, so you better get right into that, right in that review. 9 weeks away. So now that that's all out of the way, shall we get into the news?
We shall. This first one, not too much to say about it, but Paul, on May 21st, the day that we were selling t-shirts at New York City Veg Food Fest, a mere 27.9 miles away.
Very exact.
At the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. Ringling Brothers held their final show. And I just wanted to mention it because I feel like we often kind of talk about some negative stuff, which we will later in the show, and wanted to celebrate this little thing. We talked about Ringling a while ago about this whole campaign and what does it mean to campaign to just get the elephants out and single issues and like all of these things. I think it's awesome. I love seeing this giant, really kind of like a symbol of animal exploitation fall.
Yeah.
And I think it shows the changing of the times. It's showing other people that are thinking about getting into that industry that it's probably not going to be as profitable for them. Mm-hmm. And they should take the Cirque du Soleil route or something. Yeah. Maybe become a magician instead with no tigers. I don't know.
Domino's and Papa John's, we're coming for you next.
So anyway, everyone, take a moment that is involved in the campaign. Pat yourself on the back. Job well done. And then the fight continues.
Hell yeah.
Have a little party tonight. And then the fight continues. SeaWorld coming after you.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's more of an appropriate comparison.
Yeah. We're not trying to shut down Papa John's. We just want them to have vegan options.
I guess. But
we just want them to only be vegan.
They were making fun of vegans.
That's true.
Fuck
it. What was his name? Schnucks? What was it?
Something like that. Papa Schnucks or something.
All right. Okay. Let's get into some serious news. Let's get into some discussions. We got a couple of really interesting items to talk about that I think are going to warrant maybe perhaps even a little lengthier discussion than we're used to in the news section, which is cool because I think our main topic today is not going to be the longest discussion we've ever had. But came across this article from laeater.com. Vegans angry at Umami for serving the new Impossible Burger with loads of dairy.
Uh-oh.
So actually, Paul, you were in New York and really wanted to try the Impossible Burger.
It did.
And it did not work out, but it worked out for me the day after you left. And I have to say, it is still delicious. And actually, it's cool. Before, the restaurant that I went to is called Momofuku Nishi. It was the first place in New York City to have the Impossible Burger. And before, it was a dollar extra to get that vegan bun and the special vegan sauce or whatever, and now they just raised the entire price for everyone and it's default and there's no like extra cost for veganism. So
that's good.
Anyway, the Impossible Burger, we've complained that it's been doing this ridiculously slow, painfully slow rollout, and we just want it to be in the world already. It's like you've been doing that for a year or more
than
just
a year.
Let's let the public have it. But anyway, Umami Burger has out in LA has decided that they're going to start serving it, but there was a snag.
Uh-oh.
Because it is default very not vegan. So from this article, despite the patty itself being vegan, some meatless bloggers have reportedly run into issues because the bun, sauce, and parts of the finishing process are decidedly not so. And side note, parts of the finishing process is like their flavor dust that they add onto it is apparently not even vegan. So it's
flavor dust.
It's like pounded into the burger.
It's just Cheeto dust. They're just flopping in some Cheeto dust.
There's just some guy like eating Cheetos all day and then just like blowing it off his fingers.
Which totally sounds like something Taco Bell would do.
Yep.
And probably have done.
Yes. So anyway, Eater reached out to Umami to confirm, though regardless, it is worth noting that the Impossible Burger team isn't focused on making a fully vegan burger, bun and all, but instead catering to regular meat eaters with a more sustainable and similar alternative. So Umami Burger issued a statement on the whole thing. The Impossible Burger patty was created entirely from plants, making it vegan, yes, but its intent is for people who love meat, not vegans. It's a delicious option with sustainability benefits, using 95% less land, 74% less water, and creates 87% less greenhouse gas emissions while being 100% free of hormones, antibiotics, and artificial ingredients. While their standard preparation isn't vegetarian or vegan, it's easy to order it that way. We'd like to note, Umami Burger has never claimed that the Impossible Burger would be vegan. Just the patty as created by Impossible Foods is vegan. So when they say it's easy to make it not vegan, you have to order it with like lettuce wrap instead of a bun. That's very sad and disappointing.
Yeah.
And then I went and dug around on Impossible Foods Facebook page to see if they had posted about it, which they did. And then I wanted to see if they had received negative comments from vegans, which they did. Which we'll talk about that in just a second. But anyway, on Facebook, Impossible Foods responded to someone that was kind of questioning this move by saying, "During our launch, our primary focus has been on opening the minds and stomachs of meat eaters to the Impossible Burger so that we can have the greatest possible impact on our planet. Umami Burger is known for serving delicious, indulgent burgers, and we're confident that meat eaters will find the Impossible Burger just as delicious as their other offerings. As we grow, we're excited to enter more restaurants in LA and across the country, making it easier for everyone everywhere to enjoy our burger." So my question... I have several questions, Paul.
All right.
So my first question is, like, what do you think of this strategy? And should vegans be understanding of this strategy, which is like... I guess not trusting that making it fully vegan will be good enough to like make meat eaters want it. Like, are they like, it needs to have cheese on it in order for a meat eater to want to try it? Otherwise it's just going to cater to vegans. And whose mind is that really going to change? Like, what do you think of this strategy? What do you think is the motivation behind this?
I'm going to say this. I don't necessarily think that Impossible Foods is at fault. Maybe I think it would totally...
Are you saying I should put down my pitchfork and burning torch?
Put it down. Setting off the fire alarm in here. I will say...
Good one.
Thank you. If the Impossible Burger was widely available, this would definitely not be an issue, I don't think. If someone was like, oh, I know that I just won't get the Impossible Burger here, I'll get it down the street. So yeah. It's like, I think that's one issue. Or that's one reason why it is an issue, because it's still so exclusive, which sucks for other reasons. But here's the reason why I don't agree with what Umami Burger is doing, is because it's not the bun or like the powder seasoning that's going to make a meat eater go, wait a second, you're telling me the bun's not vegan? Like, I'm not trying this. It's the burger that's going to make people say like, oh, you're telling me this isn't made out of real meat. Like, no one's gonna eat the Impossible Burger and then say like, this bun doesn't taste vegan. No one care. No one's gonna. My point is that the person that's eating it, that's like they were saying, like the person that does eat meat, that's going to eat this, is not going to be concerned about those secondary things. Like, the main attraction is this patty that is not made out of meat. If you didn't even mention, like, there'd be no reason to advertise like, oh, this is, you would say, like, your description would say like the Impossible Burger, and then the description would be like a patty made out of vegetables and soy, whatever it's made out of, pea protein, I don't know. Like, there'd be no reason to say like, and it's also on a like a vegan bun or something like that, because a vegan, yeah, they're gonna go up and ask like, is this bun vegan? And you can say yes, cool. A meat eater isn't gonna look at that description and say like, I think I'm sold on this, but is the sauce have dairy products in it? Because I'm not going to eat this if the sauce doesn't have dairy products. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, but I'm also wondering if, like, I've never eaten an Umami Burger. Maybe they have like a signature bun that everyone loves and is like a certain quality that they expect. And it's like all this extra work for them to do to go find an exact replica of the bun that they have. And they're like, eh, whatever. Like, who cares?
Hand it. Tell them to suck it up. Because it's like, you know, it's like in most restaurants, when you see this option, especially if it's like a steakhouse or something or a burger place, that has like one or two vegan options. You know, there's usually like a big V next to it or something like that.
Or a little V.
Or a little V for vegetarian. But like, again, I'm just going back to the point that it's like if, I don't know. I just don't think that omitting the bun being vegan and the other thing, that's not going to be the thing that would turn people off from it. So, because that's their justification, is they're saying like, they're trying to say like, oh, people aren't going to want to order it if it's completely vegan.
I would bet that they have burgers there that don't have cheese on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Period.
Yeah. And also, I feel like it almost kind of sends the message that in order for this burger to be good, we have to dress it up with non-vegan mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah, and that looks bad on Impossible Foods end.
Yeah.
Which, as we know, as Andy knows, because I don't know, it's a darn good burger.
What if you finally try it and you think it's horrible?
I don't know. You said it's better than the Beyond Burger, and I love the Beyond
significantly,
Burger.
Significantly. I have since heard a few detractors that do not like it. And I know, gasp. What, audible sigh.
You just had it. Yeah. What was it dressed with?
It was a bun. There was lettuce. There was like a special sauce, which I don't really know what it was. It was kind of runny. Like I could probably live without it. Normally it comes with tomato, but I left that vile, disgusting, snot-filled creation off of it. And it came with like a pile of fries, and you have to ask for ketchup on the side.
No cheese?
No cheese.
So what's
that? And it default comes with cheese.
Yeah.
So you got to ask for it vegan. But, you know, it's interesting because every time I'm in there, they are not a burger place, Momofuku Nishi.
Yeah.
They're like, Asian food of some kind. I forget exactly what their specialty is, but they're not like a burger place. It's like noodles and soups and things like that. And I would guess that like 80% of the people in there are there getting the burger whenever I look around and see what people are ordering. And when I walk by someone, they had like some kind of noodle dish with like a sunny side up egg on it they were cutting into it. And I was like, ugh, why are you getting that? Don't you know the Impossible Burger is here? But
do you not know?
You fool. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. But basically to say that like people are interested in this burger. People want to try this burger. And I doubt, with you, Paul, I doubt that someone's like, I would try this, but there's not coagulated like cow like fluid on it. Like, oh, that's so gross.
Yeah.
Like it seems like a weird thing, but maybe they just don't want to deal with annoying vegans.
But isn't this going to make vegans more annoying?
but they won't come into the restaurant. Although maybe it'll make it worse for the few that do come into the restaurant and are like, double second guessing every ingredient and like making a million modifications because they need it on this, that, the bun, whatever. But like, I would never want to eat, unless I developed like a gluten intolerance, I would feel like the saddest human if I ate a burger, but instead of a bun, I just had pieces of soggy lettuce.
Maybe it's BYOB. Bring your own bun.
There you go. Bring your own magic dust, bun, and special sauce.
Your own vegan Cheeto dust. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that's... And it's like, you know, you can still offer it without cheese. And then if someone comes in there and says, hey, can you put real cheese on this? I'm sure they're like, yeah, sure, they can do that then. But just make it, I don't know. Just
or like, yeah, add cheese for a dollar, like whatever.
Yeah.
So what do you think about Impossible Foods? I know you said you don't think it's really on them. But, like, given that they're not just kind of like, hey, here's the burger meat, whoever wants it, it seems like they're still being very selective about who gets it. I mean, so I guess, is it like, oh, we're going to put it in Umami Burger because they have this reputation for having the best burgers in town, and that's going to give us, like, some more clout with meat eaters? Or do you think it was, like, a bad move on their part to sort of allow it into this restaurant that wasn't going to make it vegan?
Well, their whole thing is, like... in ethical and environmental, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, that's why it surprises me that they wouldn't be stricter about it, even just a little bit stricter, stricter in the sense that like make it possible to be an actual like vegan creation. That's not some gross salad wrapped.
That would go against their name, Paul. It would be impossible.
But maybe, like you said, maybe they were like, all right, we want to get into Umami Burger because it's going to get us hyped up more than we already are. And maybe in the discussions, Umami Burger said, yeah, you can sell this to us. We'll buy this from you, but we're not going to change our, we're not going to make a new bun. We're not going to make a new sauce. Maybe that was the conditions, and Impossible Foods said, we really think it's going to benefit us. So yeah, we'll do it.
So you think it's kind of like a Hampton Creek white chocolate chip situation?
It could be. Yeah, it could be. I mean, I'm basing this off of nothing besides the fact that it seems like Impossible Foods has a very specific goal, and this seems to go against that goal. Because yeah, it's like, yeah, they'd be getting people to eat less meat, but then there's all this other stuff. Because it's like, you know, you were throwing out all those stats, but then it's like the other stuff that's being processed to it to a lesser extent, but that's also having, like, you know, a harmful effect to the environment.
Do you think that, like, maybe we could look at it like the trade-off is worth it? Like, them getting into Umami Burger is going to reach a lot more meat eaters than if they just stick to places that are, like, all vegan. And they, for the most part, they haven't been in all vegan places. I know they were in Crossroads in LA, which is all vegan, but, like, Bear Burger in New York City, Momofuku Nishi in New York City. I forget where they are in San Francisco. But, like, I'm wondering if there is a benefit in sort of, like, what if adding the cheese did make it so much better and hypothetically is gonna turn more people onto this burger and therefore get them on, like, the meatless path, even if it's not a vegan path, you know, but hopefully that could be the foot in the door for vegetarian. Like, I don't know if we can really quantify this or if it's, like, worth really talking about, but, like, is there a possibility that that trade-off would be worth it?
But it's, like, still, just make it. Make it vegan, and then, like, yeah, they can add cheese if they ask for it or something like that.
Or maybe at the very least make it easy to make it vegan, because even though they say it's easy to make it vegan, it's like, okay, no bun, sauce, or, like, the seasoning we use to make it taste like our stuff. Like,
yeah,
that's kind of like the unicorn frappuccino from Starbucks. It was like, if you want to make it vegan, you basically have to remove everything that makes it what it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, it's easy to say don't put these four things or in it, but then it's not what it is. Mm-hmm. And people are going to get, like, a watered down version of an umami burger.
So, but again, it's like, I don't know. I just think if they want, their goal is to make people eat more sustainably and environmentally friendly and ethically, then, like, show them what that means. Don't show them halfway. It's very reducitarian, Andy.
I love recording with you because I like being able to catch your eye mid-sentence and I already know where you're going.
I didn't know where I was going until I said that, and then we both looked at each other. But it's very, like, oh, cool, like, this is how you eat vegan. And then they give you a product that's only 50% vegan. Like, that's kind of what they're doing.
And then Brian Caitman pops out and goes, you're a reducitarian. You're a reducitarian. Everyone's a reducitarian.
Every Impossible Burger order comes with a recording of him saying that. I don't get why they wouldn't. I mean, I get it. It is probably because Umami just doesn't want to make a vegan bun or a vegan special sauce or a vegan powder, but
don't they know that Nooch is the magic powder?
So I get that, and then maybe I would say maybe Impossible Burger shouldn't have sold it to them then, because I don't know. Andy,
about,
now I
what
get
about
why,
me damn it
yeah now I get why people are so upset about the vegan buns on our Instagram. You gotta be skeptical out there.
Yeah that's true. So, all right, I think we can,
that's kind of a bummer.
Why don't you wait in the car? All right, I think that's all we have to say about the Umami Burger situation. Yeah. Let's move on into an email that you received recently.
Yes, it was from you, Andy. It said, hi, Paul, just thinking about you.
What you doing?
No, I got an email from...
No, I do that through Facebook Messenger.
I got an email from Compassion Over Killing, and I got actually a few emails from them from their newsletter talking about how they had kind of sent an investigator into a into Mason-Dixon Farms and kind of got some undercover video, and I received a string of emails like, oh, showing you, like, check out this video we released, and then a little bit later got another email that was like, oh, there have been charges filed because of this video. And then a little bit later, got another email that said, hey, did you see these charges that were filed because of this video?
And then they poked you on Facebook. And you're like, I didn't even know you could still poke people on Facebook.
And so this last one, just reading a little bit from that email, it says, charges filed for cruelty to cows. Following the release of our heart-wrenching video revealing violent abuse of cows, a Mason Dixon Farms employee was charged with and pled guilty to 3 counts of animal cruelty, court records reveal. As WITF reports, the worker will be ordered to pay fines and court costs, which are expected to top $1,000. Mason Dixon, one of the East Coast's largest dairy factory farms with 2,500 cows, is a supplier to Land O'Lakes and Dairy Farmers of America. And then towards the bottom, the email said, just to give you a little bit more about what was going on, it said, while cruelty charges have been filed in response to our video, we want to make sure that this kind of animal abuse doesn't happen again. Join us and take action for cows. It's your generosity that helps keep our cameras rolling. Please support our investigators today. And there's like a little donate button. And then I also clicked on, because there was a hyperlink over the join us and take action for cows, just to see what they were kind of suggesting. And it brought me to their website where it was a page where you could like sign a change.org petition. You could share the video on Facebook and Twitter. It said like try going vegan. And so there was a link to tryveg.com. You could send a thank you note to the investigators. And then there's another thing for the donating. So Andy, I was just wondering how do you react to this?
Well, first, I'll say I did watch a little bit of their video, mm-hmm. which I typically avoid watching videos of this nature now because, you know, I'm almost 10 years in. I'm on board. I'm on the team. But I obviously like to know what we're talking about. And it is what they have shown is horrible and horrific. So I don't want to underplay that aspect of it when we talk about these things. I do see the value in undercover videos in many regards, even though we have our, you know, mixed opinions on the use of graphic imagery when advocating. Mm-hmm. And we have a whole episode on that. But whenever I see things of this nature where they're really like celebrating, you know, the hammer getting brought down on one or several low-level employees at these situations, all I can think is that it really just reinforces the idea that there's a right way to do this, you know, because it's like, oh, the law has reinforced that this person went a little too far in what they've done and they're going to pay some fines and they're going to see justice. Well, the people at the top of the food chain of like, you know, the hierarchy of the, whereas like the bosses at the top, they're not really seeing much damages coming from this. Like it's all placed on this low-level worker. I don't believe this was the case in this video from what I could tell. And, you know, the farm is in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, I believe. So not like super far south, but, you know, normally things like this, it's like low-level like workers of color and people that, as we've talked about before, are people that are really getting taken advantage of in the agricultural system. And so it's just kind of penalizing people that are in like a tough situation and sort of have to take jobs that not a lot of other Americans really want to take. And so it's kind of like we're forcing people into these horrible jobs and then like penalizing them for doing what they need to do to be effective at their jobs. And what they have to do to be effective at their jobs is horrible and horrific. And mm-hmm. I hate seeing footage of that, but you know, there's like a scapegoat that happens, which is like this evil person did an evil thing to mm-hmm. an animal, but like everyone misses the point that it's like, well, they're doing it because they're being paid by most of society to do this thing. It kind of mimics this like pipeline of putting people into prison, putting like people that are in at-risk communities into prison and like putting all these fines on them. And it like doesn't generally sit well with me.
Yeah. No, I think those are a lot of good points. Do you think, would you have, how, not would you have felt differently? Because I think you would have felt differently, but how would you have felt if somehow, if it wasn't, if this hadn't led to one employee or several employees, lower level employees being penalized and fined and charged with something, but rather the company being charged with something? and being ordered to pay some fines. Because because I think that would be better, but do you still think it's reinforcing the idea that there is a right way to do these things, and this company was just in this video doing it the wrong way, and that all they need to do is just do it differently, but do the same thing, kill the animals.
Yeah.
But how would you have felt if the company had been required to pay?
I would feel better about that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, kind of anything that impacts like their bottom line is like hard for me to see it as like being negative.
Yeah.
But I mean, even if they were like, you didn't do this the right way and we're shutting you down entirely right now, it still is kind of like, I'd be like, oh, that's great. But also at the same time, it's still reinforcing like there are farms that do it well. And so we're not going to shut them down. It sends the message that like animal cruelty is on the shoulders of the workers and not the people that are paying them to do the dirty work.
Do you think then that the most effective, I don't even know if I would have to call it undercover video, or just, do you think that the most effective videos are just going to be the ones that then show what happens every day, the standard?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I was touring with 10 Billion Lives Tour, the vast majority of the footage we showed people was standard practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I can personally attest that that is very affecting and very moving for most people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously showing like the horrific abuse is going to get a little bit more of an emotional mm-hmm. reaction out of people. But I think even like, I think that when I say to someone, what I'm showing you is legal, and they're allowed to do this, and this is like in like textbooks, and this is what they'll teach you, you know, and you're at like a school with like an agricultural program, like this is what they're teaching people to do in there.
Yeah.
Is this. And to me, that's more horrifying than like a, you know, quote unquote, few bad apples, you know, and it's like
the really bad
animals
stuff,
yeah. don't always do what you want them to do. You know, it's like, it's going to be a frustrating situation. It's not, I don't mean that to like excuse what they're doing, but it's like, these things happen all the time. We just don't catch them on video all the time,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But when we catch them and people are like, well, that's illegal and they got fined, and oh, the system works as it does because it's not going to happen anymore because they got fined. And it's like, yeah, the system is going to continue to exploit and kill animals.
Yeah.
You know, that sucks.
Yeah. And then I guess my last question would be, is it, because you had said you would feel better about if this had landed on the shoulders of the Mason-Dixon Farms and not the one employee, does that ever happen? Like, do these undercover investigations, I shouldn't say ever, because I'm sure it's happened sometimes, but is it often that happens, or is it, if you know, the majority of the time just kind of, because I'm just trying to think, like, is there a different way that maybe the evidence can be presented or somehow given something so that it falls on the company and not the individual? Like, could they just like blur people's faces out in the video? I mean, I'm sure the company
they do can, in this video.
Yeah, I'm sure that I was going to say, I'm sure the company can still figure out who it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I don't know enough to say that it's never happened like that, but from what I see, it's usually a low-level worker or, you know, four or five of them that get busted. And then, you know, like you saw in this series of emails, get sort of paraded out in front of the world so that, like, and it's not like they get paraded out in front of the world and, like, a bunch of the vegan supporters of whatever group. And I don't mean to call out COK on this. This is, like, endemic across the entire movement, at least any groups that do undercover investigations. They're just kind of like a starting point for this conversation.
Yeah.
But, you know, they get kind of paraded out in front of, you know, their followers, and everyone talks about how horrible and evil and savage mm-hmm. these workers are and how they would like to do these horrible things and they deserve to die and they deserve to, you know, have the things happen to them in the video, all of that stuff. And then it, you know, helps the whatever group it is get donations. And, you know, it's just like it seems like it misses the point, and it's kind of exploiting a situation that is, you know, it's like not the conversation that we need to be having. It's like an aside from the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And I totally, like, I get why they would want to, I don't know if parading them around is the right word, but I get why they would want to celebrate these victories, because it's like, as you know from the show, good things don't happen very, very frequently. So it's like when, when a good thing does happen, it's like, yeah, you do want to feel good about it, but that doesn't mean you need to stop like analyzing the amount of goodness or effectiveness that it may have actually been.
Yeah. Yeah. But
like, I'm sure there's been people protesting the Ringling Brothers for decades, you know? And it's like, if that might have been someone's thing that they did for like most of their life. And now it's like that has finally happened. So that'd be a cool thing if that's you.
Yeah.
You probably feel pretty darn good. And I think you deservedly so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. And it's almost, and I don't even want to say it's easy, because like from the undercover investigators that I've talked to, and I mean, you don't even need to talk to one to know this. It's a horrific experience. It's not something I feel like I could muster up the strength to do. It's not like it's an easy win, but it's like a low hanging fruit, you know, kind of win to me. But at the same time, it's like, I still think we constantly need, you know, new footage showing people this stuff is still going on, because the footage you have is from 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Yeah. Oh, things have changed since then. It's not like that anymore. The government stepped in. We have these regulations, and there's no cages anymore. Like whatever it is, it's like we still need to be like, hey, this happened 2 weeks ago, or you know, whatever it might be.
That's true.
So it's like I see the value in that,
yeah.
And I think that the people that are go in and do that work are incredibly brave and deserve you know, accolades and all that good stuff. You know, I guess to the theme of our program, often these things are kind of sticky and messy, and there's all these gray areas, and I can both like be glad someone's willing to do that work, but also not love how that work is used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. So yeah, that was I think it was a good discussion to have. I don't think it was necessarily a hooray or a but it was just kind of a thing worth discussing, and not that we have any answers, as we usually don't, but just a thing worth thinking about. And
it makes me feel icky when I see these types of victories don't feel like the victories that I want to be having in the movement.
Yeah.
And feeling icky might be a theme for our discussion later.
Feeling icky might be a theme, Andy. What's the next news story?
All aboard a vegan cruise through the Caribbean.
Icky.
If there's one word I associate with cruises, it's icky. Although after we talk about this, that might be the case.
Uh-oh.
So I saw someone post about this on the old Facebook, and I was like, this rings some bells about some articles and discussions that I read a few years ago. So let me put all of these thoughts together for you. So this is an article. It's from...
An article, you say?
I know, new for the show. Talking about an article. It's really more of an announcement, and it came from PETA.org. So here we go. And it's funny because it's not even like the bad thing I want to talk about. But you could call the holistic holiday at sea a voyage to well-being. The 10-night vegan cruise will set sail from Miami and include keynote speakers, panel discussions, and feature fitness, yoga, and cooking classes, in addition to exploring the Caribbean. Ooh. Or Caribbean. You can also sign up to receive individual consultations from some of the speakers. So what this is, Holistic Holiday at Sea, it's a vegan cruise that happens. And at first I'm like, oh, sounds like a nice thing. Vegan cruise?
Yeah.
If cruises are going to exist, I'm glad they're vegan.
It also sounds like something that Facebook would show me an ad for on the side, and I'd be like, that's not a real thing.
And also, never going to do that.
Yeah.
It's certainly not the most accessible thing. I looked at the rates, and it starts at around $2,100 per individual.
Now, Andy, I don't know much about cruise prices. Is that standard cruise pricing?
I have no idea.
To me, that sounds like a cruise price.
Yes, yes.
But I literally have no idea.
I guess what I'm saying is cruises are not
accessible
to the masses. So, and I guess for that reason, you know, I'm... You know, like to bring back like the fast food thing, it's like, okay, well, there's a lot of issues with fast food and workers' rights and all of these things. But at the same time, it's like, that's something where I'm like, if they're going to exist, I'm glad they have vegan options type thing.
Same thing.
Because I feel like they need to exist within our current system.
Yeah.
Probably.
Wait, are we talking about fast foods or cruises? Foods.
But cruises are like a thing that I'm like, that's not like a thing that like really serves a purpose, or does it?
I don't know.
You know, but it's like, It's like, you know, fairly well-off people going off on a cruise and exploiting a lot of low-level workers.
Yeah.
Themes running all over the place in this show. So the name of the cruise and then the name of the cruise ship, I was like, this is so familiar to me. And I remembered that friend of the show, Alex Felsinger, who we were interviewed about Better Eating International a couple episodes ago, he and his partner at the time won a free vegan cruise from Veg News. And they went on it and had a horrible experience for a number of reasons. And he came back and he wrote an essay on the whole thing. And it was titled, "Cruises Are Terrible and Vegan Cruise is an Oxymoron." So,
and this is the same cruise?
Yes.
So how long has this been going on for?
This is their 15th anniversary sailing.
How is, like, I'm glad you have not told me anything about the cruise yet. So it's like, I will probably say something about this afterwards, but like, I'm glad that a vegan cruise can exist for that long. It seems like something that 15 years ago, three people would have gotten on.
Well, I mean, from what I can tell, it's like super like health oriented. If I had to hazard a guess, and this is based off of my experience with events of these types and looking at the speakers as far as the price point and then like what they're talking about, I would guess the average person that's coming to this is 45 years or older and interested in health more than anything.
But Andy, how many speakers talk about oil? Is Ben Jillette one of the speakers? He has a bottle of oil and then just makes it vanish. And everyone's like, yes, yes, yes. And the crowd goes wild.
God.
And Teller's just sitting there like, that was a visual joke because he doesn't talk.
Perfect for the podcast. Yeah. Okay, let's reel it back. Let's reel it back in. Because fishing and water, I don't know.
Andy, let's get real.
Okay. I think we know where our outro music's going to be.
Real big fish.
Okay, let's bring it back. This is riveting listening. So I'm going to read from this article, and we will link to this in the show notes. I suggest people check out the whole thing.
From Alex.
Yes.
Yeah.
Check out the whole thing. I'm going to read from it, not even most of it, but a good chunk of it, because I feel like just he puts it very well about his experience. And he also has told me about how like the food really wasn't that great, and it wasn't like an entirely vegan cruise. It's like, there's like a few different cruises happening at the same time, if I remember correctly. So it's like, you know, kind of a weird thing.
That makes more sense to me.
Yeah. It's still a lot of people. But anyway, so they did this cruise and they were like, it's really not that great for a number of reasons. But then reading from this essay, we first realized something was awry on the third day of the cruise when we saw a man working at 10 p.m. who we had seen working at 8 a.m. His task was painfully mundane and monotonous, but to protect his identity, I won't mention it. After some small talk, he divulged that he works 12 hours every day until his contract is up, in his case, 3 months down with 6 months to go. He only gets a day off if he is sick, which requires a note from the ship doctor, who is hesitant to sign off on sick days since he is employed by MSC. MSC is the name of the cruise line that operates all these cruises all around the world. So this experience with talking with this crew member then sort of sparked them to start talking to every crew member they possibly could.
This, I did not read this in advance. I feel like this is a horror movie that I'm being dropped into right now.
So they start talking to every crew member, and you know, a lot of crew members are not super fluent in English, so they couldn't talk to everybody. And you know, a lot of the folks just sort of knew enough English to sort of stick to a script that they're kind of given. But they did talk to a number of people that gave them more information. They said, they're from countries with faltering economies. Local independent staffing agencies interview people looking for work and tell them about opportunities on cruise ships. Details are scarce, but they're told that they'll be paid usually around $850 a month for a 9 to 12 month contract. This appeals to most people because even if they found a local job, it's not likely to pay nearly as much. But then they're told they need to undergo training to be eligible to work on the ship. Various safety training classes add up to $1,000 or more before they're told that they also need to undergo medical tests at their own cost. Brain scans, chest scans, psychological screenings, and drug tests. Before they've even seen a contract, they've invested $2,000 or more dollars into obtaining it. Since this amounts to several years' salary in most countries, they often need to borrow funds from unscrupulous sources just to afford to be eligible to work for MSC. Only then are they shown a contract. They'll see that they'll be working 12 hours every day without any days off, but they cannot refuse because they need to recoup their debts. They also see that they'll be responsible for paying their way on the ship, with charges for uniforms, laundry, food, internet, and anything else they do on board. Other costs they don't find out until later. If a cabin steward receives a poor rating from a passenger on the survey at the end of the cruise, $40 is taken from his paycheck, the equivalent of a full day's work. They receive no reward for an excellent rating.
So yes, a horror movie, literally.
So, I mean, I feel like this is also something we see with like agriculture workers as well, mm-hmm. that are sort of recruited across the border and promise certain things, but then they're stuck in this debt trap and they can't leave. And then they're like literally held where they are. They can't run away. In this case, you know, they're on a ship. So yeah. It's like, I guess unless they go to port, you know, that they can't escape from the situation. So I don't know. It's such a bummer.
Yeah.
And I checked with Alex before talking about this to find out the name of the ship they were on. It's the same ship that they're doing. It's operated by the same, you know, overall cruise company, MSC. And this was in 2014. And I found another article from the BBC in 2014. Brazil rescues cruise workers from slave-like conditions. So just reading quickly from this article, Brazilian officials say the 11 crew members were forced to work up to 16 hours a day. Some were alleged to be victims of sexual harassment. And then in October of 2015, the MSC was found guilty and they were ordered to pay $330 million in damages.
To the people?
To the workers.
That's good.
I believe all to the workers. I guess I wanted to talk about this because I had never really heard about cruises. I was treated to a cruise when I was like 8 years old by my grandma. That's like really my only experience with cruises.
I go on them every other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just cruising through life, Paul. Yeah. They are, on further research, horrible for the environment. Mm. And they're basically floating sweatshops. And it just feels like this isn't really something that vegans need to be supporting.
Yeah, and it's not the thing like fast food restaurants that's just like part of everyday, you know, it's not part of our everyday life. It's not part of our everyday lives. It's not something we see every day. So it's not like you were just kind of, you had kind of mentioned, it's not something that we need to be like, oh, if we're going to have a vegan world, we need to have vegan cruises. Like that's not
that. Or if we're going to have vegan cruises, we need to make sure that, you know, that they're the workers are treated well. Like, I believe it could be possible to have a humane cruise, you know, where the workers are paid a living wage and all of that stuff, mm-hmm. And treated well and given days off, you know. But this is a situation where, like, some workers in that Brazil case, you know, had their passports held, so it's like they couldn't escape if they wanted to. And, you know, Alex talked with the founder of the cruise and asked him if he'd ever thought about these conditions, and the guy kind of blew him off and was like, I think I've seen them get off, like have off days and all this stuff. And Alex was like, let's talk to the nearest employee that will talk to us. And let's just ask them a few questions about their experience. At that point, the guy was like, I'm busy. I have to leave. And then they exchanged emails and he has never responded to his email since. And, you know, it feels like nothing has really changed on this situation, and it feels like no one really cares.
Yeah.
You know, and again, this is not something I've really heard people talk about all that much. So I feel like I wanted to put it out there to our listenership, so everyone kind of knows what's going on. And I don't know. It's a really disheartening situation. I agree with his assessment that, like, at this point in time, a vegan cruise is an oxymoron. I think we've learned about these situations, and this comes from multiple sources about MSC, but like seemingly most major cruise lines, that this is like really a horrible thing for us to be taking part in. And like I said, this isn't a necessity for people. This is a total luxury. Mm-hmm. This is a thing that people that have, you know, plenty of expendable income in most cases go and do as like a luxury thing, and it's on the backs of marginalized people that are being held in slave conditions or slave-like conditions.
Yeah. Do you know if I'm looking at the PETA article or the PETA website right now and the article, it doesn't say when it came out. I don't see it, but if you go to the living section of their website, it is like fifth from the top. So I would imagine this came out very recently.
Yeah. This article was like, it's basically a press release. You know, it's not like a lot. They're talking about how Ingrid Newkirk is going to be speaking. It was released on May 22nd, 2017.
Oh, and 2 days ago.
Yeah. And so it's to promote selling tickets to the cruise for next year, which is going to be in February of 2018. So this year's already happened.
Man, that sucks.
Yeah. So it's a bummer.
Yeah. What can we do about this?
Well, Alex actually has like a couple of suggestions in his thing. The first one is recommending at the very, you know, basic level, researching the labor practices before going on a cruise. He also says if you're going to go on one, you know, this is kind of like a band-aid on the whole thing, but like bring a lot of cash to tip. They tell the patrons of the cruise that the gratuity is included, but all the workers that they talk to said that they don't receive any gratuity from the guests. Hmm. And, you know, obviously for the cruise line's interest, they want their guests spending their cash on like extra drinks and like all of these things, not tipping the workers. So legally they can accept and not report tips that they get from people. Complained to the Vegan Cruises about the incompatibility of cruises and compassionate living. And there's links to, you know, how to contact the website is atasteofhealth.org. And, you know, ask them if they know about labor standards and like what they've done. Recommend that they recommend to their guests to tip the workers that are there, so they're getting paid, you know, wages. Because like you think about the amount that we're talking about, like $40 a day, that's not, I mean, obviously for some people that's a lot of money, but that's not that much money. And think about what your $5 tip for cleaning the room like once a week or like whatever it is. Think about how much that increases their earnings.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Is this legal? I mean, apparently some stuff was not legal because they got, but it's like the fact that it's continuing to happen.
MSC continues to emphatically state that they are following all legal protocol. So
maybe it's like the bare minimum. As we know from the animal agriculture business, it's like the bare minimum is not what you would, not what most people would consider like ethical treatment.
It's like when I look into like sourcing t-shirts from stuff and I look at like Gildan and they kind of, I get contacted from all sorts of companies that are like, hey, we follow all like fair labor practice standards or whatever. But then you kind of look into whatever the standards are for their country or whatever. And you're just like, yeah, that's still not something I really want to support. Yeah. So
Colin Gildan out.
Listen, their shirts are very uncomfortable. So for that reason alone, no one should purchase their shirts.
Tell them like it is, Andy.
Let me tell you what.
So, that sucks. That's really sad.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's a bummer, man. I sound so defeated, and I feel like that tone's going to continue into our main discussion as well. But like, this is something that vegans, you know, we've been asked to give more like calls to action. This is something that people can raise a stink about. This is something that people can, you know, send some emails, do some phone calls. Like, if the organizer of this knows that no one really cares, then why would they change what they're doing? I'm sure they're making a bunch of money off of it. So if they get bad press from it, if they're getting people inquiring about what's going on, then, you know, and I think that's like the first step. The first step is maybe not, you know, all out negative media campaign. The first step is inquiring with atasteofhealth.org about like their labor standards and practices and letting them know what's going on.
And what do you think after that, if you get either a negative response or no response or a response that's like, they don't really care about this kind of stuff, what do you think about then contacting like the sponsors and the speakers and stuff like that? And just being like, hey, are you like, I just wanted to make you aware that like, because this is a vegan cruise, we're all about compassionate living and healthy living and stuff. And just giving them some of the ideas of the situations. Do you think that would be
that would be smart. That'd be kind of like when we talk about like direct action and whatnot, and like where we find it's appropriate. And we're talking about like the Shack campaign, where it's like, we're not going to target Huntington Life Sciences and tell them to shut down. We're going to target this investment firm that has like a few thousand dollars invested. So yeah, if you start talking to the speakers and they're the ones that are like, I'm not going to be comfortable doing this in the future, and they start pulling out, then you know, that could be a good tactic.
So let's on one depressing note to another, let's move on into our main discussion of the week, which is about Norm. No, not Norm McDonald.
Sadly. And if you ever want to treat yourself, on an uplifting note before we get into this discussion, go watch Norm McDonald's roast of Bob Saget. It is one of the most delightful things I've ever seen in my life.
The shit
everywhere. It's like a true piece of comedic genius. It's like one of the best things ever.
Thank you, Eddie. But no, we're not talking about Norm McDonald. We're talking about Norm, which is a new pro-vegan video, short film, I guess you would call it, that's on YouTube. It was released a couple weeks ago. You've seen some people posting around about it. It has not received a tremendous amount of views. It right now has 52,000 views, a mere 52,000 views. But
a lot of comments of people saying it's going to blow up.
Yeah. So they're waiting for it.
So yeah, so this short film, it's 12 minutes long, was written and directed by Miguel Endara. Apologies for mispronunciations. And before we talk about this film, we need to give like a super big content warning and disclaimer that we will be discussing sexual assault and rape, and that is the main narrative thrust of this film, is a discussion around those topics. So we will be talking about them. This film was a bummer, and it was like watching it was just like destroyed any good mood that Paul and I had. So I don't expect the discussion to be like uplifting and fun and full of laughs and all that stuff.
And I might say to people, If you're not going to, because of that disclaimer, if you're not going to listen to this, our discussion of it, don't watch the video. I'm about to spoil our discussion. Don't watch it.
I don't think we're even going to link to this video in the show notes. You can find it if you want to. So with that said, let's get into this discussion, Paul. So the short description on YouTube is, Norm is a short film about two roommates debating over the morality of rape in a society where raping women is legal and socially accepted. And so it starts off, there's a roommate sitting at like a kitchen table, listening on their headphones, watching something on their laptop. And then two men come in after a night of drinking, and they kind of interrupt this roommate that's sitting there, and they're a little drunk and tipsy. And then the rest of the film is the conversation between these three men, mostly just two of them, about the topic at hand. So like the premise of this, like the shitty Black Mirror premise of this, is that this is a world in which rape is legal. And so it's two men discussing the morality of it. And the title of the video on YouTube is What It's Like to Be Vegan.
And just so that, of course, just so that, again, you don't have to watch this, like the point, and it's very, I think it's very clear that the point, the video is, the idea of the video is, it's like you're watching something that's so horrific, and you're saying to yourself, oh, like, this is gross. How could this ever happen? And what the director wants, or the writer and director wants you to draw the comparison to, is like, that's what it feels, that's what vegans want people to see, that's how they feel, is like, how could you be participating in something this horrific and violent.
Yeah. So, you know, they go through this conversation, and basically there's just all these analogies of like, but it feels good. And if, you know, if it's so bad, why isn't it
illegal?
And, you know, just all of these things. And I guess, you know, a lot of these analogies will not be new to folks, but it like really hammers it home.
Yeah.
And again, it's just super uncomfortable. It's not visually graphic, but it is like verbally very graphic.
Like the most graphic verbal parts is like the first 2 minutes. And it was like, it like really affected me in a negative way.
Yeah.
And
so
it was not good.
So let's dig into that, Paul. What were your impressions of this short film?
I 100% get what they were trying to do. Like, I get it. It seemed like some people in the YouTube comments didn't get it at first. And we're like, oh, this was a film. They're like, oh, they're trying to say that this is about the meat industry or whatever. And it's like, yeah, it says that in the description. Like I said, the first 2 minutes is probably the most disturbing portion of the entire thing. And that just kind of like disturbed me enough that for the rest of the film, I was like, I don't like this. Like I was listening to it. I was like watching it, but I had kind of already formed my opinion by just how disturbingly graphic it was. And I think I would say unnecessarily graphic. And just overall, I don't think that this is needed to expose, because what the film is trying to do is expose our hypocrisy in being completely against, in this case, like when anyone's watching this, hopefully they would be completely against what's going on here while being for eating meat in the real world. It's like, I don't think that this is at all a necessary vehicle that's going to, I think there's plenty of other ways to kind of invoke the idea that what people are very hypocritical. For instance, Carnage. I think that's what Carnage did is what this is doing as well, where they're trying to do the same thing, where they're trying to make people see like the hypocrisy in eating meat and not being vegan. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that while watching it, but they're using different techniques, but it is, I don't know if you would consider this film satire exactly.
No. I wouldn't consider it satire, but the idea, I think for Carnage is to watch Carnage and be like, oh my God, like this, like when Carnage is like saying like, oh, and back in 2015, this happened, and you're watching and being like, oh my God, this is like, the way that they put it, you're like, yeah, this is so hypocritical. Of course, Carnage is literally talking about eating meat,
yeah,
and where this is making an analogy or a comparison, analogy, right? But I think the broad idea is that they're trying to do the same thing, is that they're trying to invoke people to realize that they're being hypocritical.
Yeah, you're right, Paul. It's like Carnage is sort of, it's taking like a, let's look in the future. Let's look at what it would be like if the moral like view of the world, and I guess legally, it's illegal to eat meat. Like, what would that conversation look like? What would those things do? And this thing, even though it's talking about sexual assault, like I guess they couldn't have had the exact same discussion, but it could have been like, well, what about, 100 years ago when like women couldn't vote or something like that. Cause they do talk about women's rights in the video, but so it's almost like using a modern setting, but transporting us back to a time when people probably did have these discussions. And I'm sure many men still have these kind of discussions.
Unfortunately.
Very much unfortunately, but it to kind of like throw you off kilter and be like, oh, like I'm not used to this cultural norm necessarily. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is using similar techniques, but from different angles.
And I'll say this, Carnage I don't think it would have been as effective, but I think it could have been made. I don't think it would have nearly been as effective, but it could have been made in a non-satire way. Like it could have done the same things, like exposing the hypocrisies that it points out the way that it does through kind of comedy. It could have still pointed those things out without comedy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that, because I'm just saying that because I don't think that, like, yeah, they're different because one is satire and one is the norm is not, I don't think it would be considered satire, but that's not like the only thing that differentiates them.
Yeah. And I feel like the humor component of Carnage was part of what, for me, made it such a successful film.
Mm, yeah.
One, because it was like, let's laugh at the vegans a little bit, but let's also be like, hey, well, we're laughing, like,
yeah, yeah.
Like kind of poking meat eaters in the ribs. Like, you're also kind of ridiculous. You realize that, yeah. right? And that, like, really lessens the blow. It's like there's certain when you take things out of, like, literal, even though I guess Carnage is kind of literal, but when you take things out of, like, a very directly preachy kind of way, you can talk about certain issues. Like, this isn't the same thing at all, but, like, Get Out is a film that's able to talk about a lot of issues. And I've heard so many white folks say that it was, like, more, I don't want to say palatable, but, like, they, like, understood it more because they're a little bit removed from it because it's this kind of hyper universe, yeah. you know?
You're removing it from reality, but just, like, a little bit.
Just a little bit, you yeah. know? And so for that reason, things like that were, like, very successful about talking about various, you know, social issues, but still kind of keeping people in the fold. You know, of yeah. like wink, wink, you know what we're doing here. And the way that Norm was done, it was very, I don't know. I mean, it's super off-putting. And I'm wondering if someone would be like, well, that's the point. Like, we're trying to make people super uncomfortable. And therefore, because you were so uncomfortable, it was effective. But I'm also like, I mean, I feel like we, like, I should just say that we've gotten so far in the conversation I've been saying this. We need to stop using, you know, violence against women as a prop for promoting animal rights. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what this whole film is. And, like, yeah. fuck that. Like, it's yeah. gross and disgusting, and people shouldn't do that. And, like, that's, like, I think probably, like, the biggest thing that rubbed me the wrong way about that was, like, it's, like, you know, we see this in so many ways. And even though this film didn't have, like, graphically visual depictions of things, like, certain, like, PETA demos or mm-hmm. 269 demos or something like that. But it still was, like, using the suffering of women as a prop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And beyond that, I think just as a, for all the reasons that we've already said, and especially that one, it's like, don't watch this video anyways. But beyond that, I think that it is too off-putting and too kind of, like, gross and disgusting and real for a lot of viewers that it's not going to be effective at all.
I mean, and I'm sure there'll be many people that do sit through this, but I am wondering how many, you know, non-vegans are going to be willing to sit through 12 minutes of this incredibly uncomfortable film.
Yeah. And I think for many people, uncomfortable is putting it lightly.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, traumatic might be the adjective that some people would possibly use.
Yes. No, I agree with you. I'm underplaying that a lot.
Yeah.
And
it's like, I think it's just from an effectiveness standpoint, it's just, like, too much.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to be effective, really.
Yeah. That's my intuition. You know, I guess, you know, we got an email from someone that was pointing out that we do make claims about whether something would be effective or push people away, and, like, it's hard to quantify those things.
Yeah.
So I guess I am wary of making, like, that particular claim, but I think that we don't need that to make our point. And, you know, we've just been given this beautiful gift of Carnage to show how to use these type of techniques to mm-hmm. make the point very clearly.
Yeah. Although, I mean, we've gotten emails that said some people didn't like Carnage, so.
Yeah.
What the fuck do we know?
You know, Paul, it's been a minute since I've heard you say it, but who knows? I don't know.
You spin my catchphrase.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't really want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, I think that's about all the discussion that this film really warrants.
Don't watch it.
Don't watch it, and don't post it, and we won't put a link to it anywhere. So yeah, I don't know. It's just a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah. But surprisingly, I was scrolling through the comments, and the vast majority were very positive.
I was looking. I did the same. I was looking for the people that were coming out hard against it, and I didn't really see that. So it worries me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll leave the discussion there. Let us know what you think. To leave it on this very somber note,
yeah.
Let us know what you thought about this video. If you did watch it, and if you don't feel like watching it, totally understand. I don't think my life would have been any worse if I didn't see this film.
And I imagine the majority of our listeners, I would think, are vegan, vegetarian, So it's like, don't watch it anyways, because it's not going to be the thing that affects, it makes you become vegan probably.
Yeah.
Because you already are.
But yeah, so send us an email about this or any of the topics that we have covered on the show today, or any topic you want us to cover in the future. You can do that by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com or head over to the website, thebeardedvegans.com.
And if you have an ethically sourced cruise and want to sponsor us and send us on it, go for it. So, what do you got going up, Andy? Coming up? What do you got going up? What do you got coming up?
Going up in the air in a hot air balloon.
Not a cruise.
Ethical balloons only. I don't know how bad hot air balloons are for the environment.
I can't imagine that bad.
I mean, they use a lot of heat. It's like global warming.
But it's like it's pretty small.
Yeah, but a lot of people do it.
How many people are the moving hot air balloon
travel circuit?
I mean, I think if we were talking blimps, then maybe. Actually don't know.
What is a balloon but a great big blimp? To answer your question, Paul, I will be doing the Cleveland Veg Fest in Cleveland, Ohio on June 3rd.
June 10th, I'm going to be in New York City for Vegan Street Fair. Very excited about that.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. And June 11th, I'll be at the Asheville Vegan Fest in Asheville, North Carolina. June 18th, I'll be at Vegan Market at the Market Hotel in Brooklyn, New York. June 24th, Richmond Veg Fest, Richmond, Virginia. June 25th. Vegan pop-up in Morristown, New Jersey, which is presented by the New Jersey Veg Fest. That brings us through June. I got plenty of other dates in July and beyond. You can find all of those dates, deets, and links at CompassionCo.com. That's CompassionCo.com.
And make sure to send us those emails at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And hit us up on the Instagram, TheBeardedVegans, and Facebook, because we got a Facebook that has far too few likes.
And hey, we broke 1,000 recently.
Yay. And it's like, I've said this before, but the Instagram, you'll see all the great food pics. The Facebook, you're going to get some better discussions going on. So I guess depending on which one
you're... Yeah, we've actually had some really nice discussions on the Facebook recently.
Yeah. So I guess people just like the food.
Well, Paul.
Yes, Andy?
If I ever did find my perfect ethical cruise, I would wake up every morning to the captain on the loudspeaker saying the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
Did we? I don't know if we've recorded it all together in the year 2017. Maybe in the beginning of January.
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about that for the rest of the episode.
Let's not find out. Umami Burger has never claimed that the Impossible Burger would be vegan. Just the patty as created by is vegan.
Impossible Burgers.
Impossible Foods.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, then I will break out my pitchfork and flaming torch again.
And take down the boat?
I don't know. Just get an angry mob together. Go yell at some people.
But not sink the boat, because I feel like that's what you were implying.
No.
All right. No sinking boats here.
There's a callback to my reference about carrying a pitchfork earlier.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Maybe I'll just edit that out.
Yeah. Yeah.